Last spring, Vancouver residents, local businesses, and community groups came together to oppose Walmart, and City Council listened. Council rejected the application for a new big box superstore on Marine Drive, and Vancouver remains Walmart free, at least for now. With last weekend's election of Sam Sullivan for mayor, Walmart's application may be reconsidered, and with a pro-development council, this time it may be accepted. Liza Featherstone knows a lot about what happens when Walmart comes to town. She is a New York-based journalist who's done extensive writing and research on the megastore, and she's the author of Selling Women Short, The Landmark Battle for Workers' Rights at Walmart, and she joins me by phone this morning from Massachusetts. Hello, Liza.
Hi there.
Now, what happens to a community when Walmart opens up?
Well, a couple things. First of all, a lot of people don't realize how much money a community spends just to have Walmart come in the first place. Walmart often demands millions of dollars in subsidies and tax breaks, and so that's an enormous cost right up front just to build the store. Then what also happens is that the downtown of the community is often quite decimated by the competition from the Walmart, with the result that people find they have to drive more, because usually the Walmart is located on the outskirts of town. That can result in much more car traffic as opposed to foot traffic, more congestion, more pollution. It's also, Walmart drives down the retail wages in the area. So if you've got grocery stores or other retailers that are paying decent wages, they'll find they have to lower their labor costs in order to compete with Walmart. In fact, one study by a Penn State economist recently found that for each new Walmart that comes into a community, poverty rates increase countywide. So that's also a significant problem that a community faces when Walmart comes to town.
One of Walmart's key messages is that it can provide low-priced goods that are affordable to working people and those with low incomes. What's the cost of having those cheap consumer goods?
Well, it's certainly true that Walmart brings low-cost goods to a community, but I think one of the problems is that there are so many costs that don't show up on your receipt. You know, when you shop at Walmart, you look at your receipt and you think, gosh, I'm really saving so much money. But you don't see some of the costs to you as a taxpayer. Like, for instance, when Walmart comes to town, you're paying quite a bit in public assistance to support workers who can't make ends meet, despite the fact that their employer is making billions in profits. So you are paying with your local health clinics, your local health care when the employees have to go to the emergency room because they don't have health insurance, public housing, all manner of public assistance that you as a taxpayer are paying to support this company, whose heirs, the Walton family, are actually the richest family in the world. So, you know, these are the profits from these low prices are not going to the workers, and you as a taxpayer are just ending up subsidizing the Walmart family, basically.
I want to turn a little more to talk about the workers, and there are reports that a recently leaked company memo includes recommendations for discouraging, quote, unhealthy workers from applying at Walmart in order to reduce health care expenses. What was in this memo?
This memo is quite amazing. This was a memo to the board of directors written by Susan Chambers, who's Walmart's vice president for benefits. Her job was to come up with ways that Walmart could keep its health care costs down while addressing some of the criticism that Walmart has received for having such poor health benefits. Of the criticism, she wrote, our critics are correct in some of their assertions, namely, our health insurance is too expensive for low-income Americans. So that she certainly admitted that right there, and she also admitted that according to Walmart's own internal documents, 46% of the children of Walmart employees were on Medicaid. That's the public health care system for poor people in the United States, or lacked health insurance altogether. And I know because you have national health insurance in Canada, this isn't as pressing an issue for you, but in the United States, it's a very serious problem when an employer won't provide health insurance, because it gives that employer a competitive advantage over other employers that are providing health insurance. So you're lucky that that's a way that's something that gets taken out of competition for businesses in Canada. But yes, so her solution was, you know, we've got these escalating healthcare costs. We're getting criticized about our poor health benefits. That clearly the solution is to, quote, dissuade unhealthy people from coming to work at Walmart.
Dissuade, that's quite a word there.
Yes, it's quite a word, and that was the exact word she used. And what she meant was that they should add more physical activity to each of the job descriptions. So, for example, and this is the example she gave, cashiers should have to gather carts from the parking lot. So every job should be made to sound more physically difficult, so that somebody who was, for example, obese or had a physical disability or was sick in some way would think, well, that's not a job I'm going to be able to do. I mean, and this is just outrageous that Walmart is proposing to keep its healthcare costs low by effectively discriminating against people who have some sort of disability.
Is there discrimination against other groups of workers? We talked about the people who have some kind of disability, but can you trace discrimination against other groups?
Absolutely. The subject of my book, Selling Women Short, is a sex discrimination case against the company, which is the largest civil rights class action suit in history, representing 1.6 million U.S. women who have worked for Walmart. So discrimination is certainly not a new thing to this company. And, you know, absolutely, in this healthcare memo, they are really outlining a plan to discriminate against the disabled. And that's something they've actually been accused of in the past as well. Some developmentally challenged people have sued them, as have some hearing impaired workers as well.
Now, we know about the experience in Jonquière, Quebec, here in Canada, where workers organized a union in a store, and then the company closed the store. What's been the experience in the U.S. with workers trying to organize?
Similar, except people haven't gotten as far as that. A similar thing occurred on a smaller scale when a group of meat cutters in Jacksonville, Texas, 5 years ago, voted to join the union. The very next week, Walmart announced that it was switching to prepackaged meat in all its company's operations. Not coincidentally, that eliminated the need for meat cutters, the group that had just voted to join the union. 3 years later, a labor court judge ruled that Walmart had acted illegally and needed to recognize the union and begin the bargaining process. But it didn't matter, because it was too late. Those workers had already left the company.
So quite a pragmatic approach they take to...
Exactly. It's extremely practical, because they know that when they break the law, they, in a situation like that, they can get away with it, because the mechanisms of our government work so slowly and ineffectively.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, municipal elections were held last week in British Columbia. In Vancouver, Walmart's rejected application was a campaign issue. Does Walmart have a record of getting involved in municipal elections if they're interested in setting up in that community?
Most certainly. In many, many instances in local elections in the United States, Walmart has contributed money to city council people or mayoral candidates in order to position itself advantageously to enter the community. And that's something they've become much more savvy about in recent years.
Now, recently you participated in events around Robert Greenwald's documentary, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. What do you think people are taking away from that film?
I think people are taking away the sense that this is a business model that really needs to be questioned, the Walmart business model. I think a lot of people go into it perhaps with some sympathy for the issues, the labor issues, environmental issues, but perhaps without much background on Walmart. And I think people come away from the film with a much better versed in the issues, but also kind of riled up. It's a good movie in that sense that it does certainly make you mad and makes you want to do something about it.
Have you noticed a change in Walmart's public relations strategy since the film was released?
Well, I think Walmart's public relations strategy is always getting a bit more aggressive, but they certainly have ramped up that aggressiveness since the film came out. In fact, before the film was even released, Walmart was attacking it on its website and trying to discredit the director, even doing very strange things like circulating negative reviews of his other movies. very unusual and personal. And they've certainly been very eager to take this movie on. And Walmart has a war room now, a campaign-style public relations strategy. They've hired a fellow who is the leading strategist for the tobacco industry, which I find pretty funny. Because
well, it's an interesting choice of somebody to have on their side.
Exactly. And I find that very funny because the tobacco industry is certainly not an image that most of us have a very positive image of. So I don't know how good a job that guy has done, but it's certainly an indicator of where they feel they are with their public relations problems, that they feel they're in as much trouble as the tobacco industry.
Do you have any advice for us here in Vancouver to fight against that Walmart coming in?
Yes, I think that what has really worked in other communities that have successfully kept Walmart out, and it sounds like you certainly already have this to some extent, the strength of your alliances and the breadth of your alliances, the more different kinds of groups and different people that are involved in this, so that people can't just say, oh, it's labor and they're a special interest group, or, you know, oh, it's, you know, the small businesses and they're just looking out for themselves. Like, the more different kinds of people and different kinds of constituency you have in your coalition, so that you can really stand together and say, no, this is really about the public. This isn't just about one group. This is about what's best for our community as a whole.
I guess we should say thank you to you for all the work that you've done in bringing some of the worker injustices to light so that we can use that information as we fight against it.
Oh, thanks so much.
Thanks for speaking with me this morning, Liza.
It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Liza Featherstone. Liza is the author of Selling Women Short, The Landmark Battle for Workers' Rights at Walmart. You're listening to Red Eye on Co-op Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.